The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I'm going to urge and encourage blue states like a California or a Chicago or a Illinois, to do the same thing. I don't want to do that. I want the country to have a completely nonpartisan drawing of the lines based on the census. But if they're going to do that and go nuclear, so am I.
Voters should be able to hold Trump accountable for his corruption and crimes. Trump is trying to make sure that he rigs the midterm election before we ever get to cast a vote.
We are in a period of maximum political warfare.
I will not stop, and I promise you, this president is going to, he's going to be brought down.
Yes.
He's going to be brought down. He has to be brought down. And I don't mean physically. I'm talking about politically. We will bring him down. He will be impeached again.
Look, I've been really clear that, again, let me repeat. Donald Trump is a cheater, and if they're going to cheat, then all of us have to take a hard look at what the effect of that cheating is on democracy. And that means we've all got to stand up and do the right thing. So as far as I'm concerned, everything is on the table. But once again, we're fighting for democracy.
They understand the importance of standing for what democracy is and making sure that it does not fall by the wayside. They understand that we have a Tim O'Hitler in the White House right now that thinks that he is going to become the dictator of the United States.
They don't accept us. They are showing us who they are. We should believe them, and we better have the courage to stand up. Otherwise, we will fall for anything. And in this country, we will be defeated, deported. I mean, we will lose all of our rights. And if you think it can't happen, it can. And I will liken this to the Holocaust.
They're talking about Texas redrawing its congressional district map. The last person there says, I would liken this to the Holocaust. If Democrats do it, and they do it a lot, they like to redraw the maps. That's been politics for the last 250 years. Gerrymandering is not a new thing. Look at Maryland, look at California. We'll talk about Illinois because Jay Pritzker is there. But if they do it, they're saving democracy. If Republicans go and do the exact same thing, it's an attack on democracy. It's beyond that. Who was the Crockett there says, this is Hitler in the White House, and I would liken this to the Holocaust. I mean, Democrats see a Holocaust everywhere except where it's actually happening to Jews in the tunnels of Gaza. And this story about Texas redrawing its maps has been in the news, and it's finally gotten to that point where they're just so loud with it that you have to talk about it. It's one of those stories that I don't particularly care that much about because gerrymandering has been around, and it's just the way things have been done for hundreds of years now. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily, by the way. We are, or Mr. Fleury is busy preparing, like he said yesterday, for the start of Armstrong College. He's got quite a few classes to prepare for, so I'm subbing in to help out a little bit, and I'm happy for the opportunity. If you have any comments for the show, if you want any of the literature that we offer, send those requests to td@thetrumpet.com. Like I mentioned, there, Illinois. Really, Jay Pritzker says, we have to stop Texas. This is saving democracy. He says, we're fighting for democracy here. If you look at a map of Illinois, and this is probably the most journalism thing that Stephen Colbert has ever done on his show, is he had Jay Pritzker on his show, and he shows him the map that's there on your screen, and he has the governor walk him through this map. Well, you're getting pretty angry at Texas, but let's have a look at your state. And I'm from Illinois, and I remember laughing at these maps all through my teen years because it was just comical when these things would come out, how they would try to just thread these things around. And then it goes up this corridor of 294, and it's just for the homeless people under the highway, and then sneaks around to grab up another minority population so that it can take away votes from the rural area. I mean, you look at this map, it's comical. I think my town, south of the city, way it's in farmland, rural Illinois, is in the same district that Barack Obama's house is in Hyde Park, Chicago. I mean, it's unbelievable how they draw these things. And notice this clip of, again, to his credit, Stephen Colbert. Maybe he's nervous that his show's being canceled and he wants to start bringing in a little more, bringing a few more truth bombs. Notice this clip of him with the governor of Illinois, clip five.
If you're considering doing a little more redrawing in Illinois, you already have some crazy districts in Illinois. Take a look at this. Look at 17 here. It does that. Then it comes up here and it sneaks around there and goes all the way up here and then goes right over there like that. And look at this one kind of goes whoop up there. It's like the stinger on a scorpion down here. Is this common for all states to do?
Well, we handed it over to a kindergarten class and let them decide.
Okay, that's the nonpartisan group that does this.
Absolutely.
For you guys?
That's our independent commission, you know. Mm-hmm. Look.
Oh, it's a big joke when Illinois does it. It's certainly not the Holocaust when Illinois does it. I was thinking back to that map he's showing. It was just a couple years ago, and that was to get rid of three Republican seats in Congress. And Adam Kinzinger, crybaby Kinzinger, was one of them. I mean, no love lost there between his kissing up to the Democrats. They just kicked him right out of Congress, basically. And this, I mean, you look at this system. I don't know all the ins and outs of why Texas is able to do it now. I think every state legislature, they get to redraw the map, and that's why it's such a big deal to win those state elections. And I'm not sure if it has to be done every 10 years or if you can just do it and then it's set for the next election. I think Ohio is doing the same thing right now, but Texas is a big deal because Trump got on the phone and said, I need five seats, and that's not even going to do anything really for him. When it comes to the midterms, a lot of analysts are saying there's just so many that are just leaning more Democrat. Again, getting into politics is just so much noise. And I look at stories like that, and you try to read the details and understand a lot of what's going on. I always get back to, this is man's best system. This is so many people invest their lives in winning those seats or in understanding how to perfectly gerrymander a district so that you have enough of your party in that block and it pulls enough away from the other so you can basically eliminate the other party's seat. I mean, it's a science what these people do. And this is man's best system. I mean, you could come up with all sorts of solutions, but why not just have a simple, there's this many people per district and it's all going to be squares. You're going to have to deal with squares and just not bring this up ever again. I think it breaks down to about 700,000 people per representative in the House. So each square is 700,000. I mean, that's too simple though. Again, there's probably a million ways or reasons why that wouldn't work. But look at, again, the Democrats. And this is just becoming politics on both sides. They accuse you of what they are guilty of. To hear those, I think that last one, she's a member of Congress, called this redistricting effort in Texas akin to the Holocaust. Talking about accusing you of what they're guilty of. Adam Schiff, he's in the news. I think it was President Trump a couple weeks ago called him out for the mortgage fraud that he committed because his permanent residence is actually in Maryland. That's where he spends most of his time in D.C. But he's got to be the senator for California. So he lied about where his primary residence was so he could get a more favorable loan. Another thing that I don't fully understand or care to get into, but this is the way these people operate. They get into all the little nitty-gritty of the law, and that's how they know in so many ways. I'll talk about it in a minute, where it's just like, how do they know how to do this? How do they know to accuse Donald Trump of the Logan Act, for instance? Well, it's because Joe Biden is violating it, and he's looking at ways to get around it. That's how they know these rules. Same with Letitia James in New York. Here's a clip from Laura Ingraham reporting on Adam Schiff's mortgage fraud, clip four.
A Trump administration source telling The Angle that a criminal investigation of Adam Schiff is underway, conducted by U.S. Attorney's Office in Maryland for possible charges involving mortgage fraud. Now, this follows the story we broke last month when the Federal Housing Finance Agency sent a criminal referral to the DOJ alleging that Schiff, in multiple instances, falsified bank documents and property records to acquire more favorable loan terms. In a 2011 affidavit signed by the then California congressman, he certified that a property in Montgomery County, Maryland, is his primary residence. He also owns a condo in Burbank, California, which he's also claimed is his primary residence, and said so in 2023 during his campaign for Senate.
I think just about every member of Congress has a residence in their state and a residence back in D.C. since we're in session much of the week. And people make a family decision where they're going to have their kids. But our principal residence, our primary residence, is California. It always has been and always will be.
Ruh-roh. Well, Senator Schiff has not responded to us about these allegations, but we were able to find a statement that his campaign spokesperson gave to CNN back in 2023. She said that the Burbank condo is his primary residence, but Adam's California and Maryland addresses have been listed as primary residences for loan purposes because they're both occupied throughout the year and to distinguish them from a vacation property.
And by the Trump standard, he should be in jail for, I think, what were they going to lock Trump up for? What was the New York? I get them confused because there's Alvin Bragg and Letitia James. I think one of them was for each violation, that was probably the Bragg case because it was each check, was a five-year sentence and there's 40 charges. So, what, 200 years in jail for Adam Schiff. By the Trump standard, he needs to be locked away for centuries. Again, I don't know all the ins and outs of that, but you look at all of these laws that they go after Trump for violating, and how do they know? How did Joe Biden, he brought it up. It was January 5th, 2017, and the Obama and friends are in the Oval Office talking about what do we do with the ICA that we just concocted, accusing Putin of colluding with President Trump. And it's Biden, who, and they're talking about General Flynn, who brings up, well, what if we could get him on the Logan Act? And everybody says, what's that? That law's, you know, as old as you are, Joe Biden. Nobody knows what law that is because he's the one violating it. He's the one working with China and Eastern Europe and Ukraine and all these other countries to sell out the United States. So, of course, they know all the ins and outs of these obscure rules. You look at the repercussions of that Russia hoax. I know we talk about it a lot, but a lot of people say, well, it's the statute of limitations. We can't get anything from 2016 to 2017. And there's a lot of debate about, well, conspiracy, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. But you look at the things that occurred after President Trump left office, January 20th, 2021, and there's plenty to go on. If that grand jury is actually happening in Florida, I suspect that has to do with the fact that there was the raid on Mar-a-Lago. And you go back to the shenanigans that the National Archives were playing with President Trump when they were packing up their boxes to leave the White House. And the archivist on TV sees the boxes and then runs over to, I can't remember all the details, runs over to so-and-so and then gets Biden to sign off basically on an FBI raid of Mar-a-Lago to get the presidential napkins. And perhaps they were going after the binder of documents that President Trump took with him. But all of this is born out of this original hoax in 2016. You look at what, imagine if they had just left President Trump alone after that moment, January 20th, 2021, and just said, okay, forget it. Perhaps he would have run again, but they kept him in the news all through that because they could not let up. It was one thing after another. It was, well, the Mar-a-Lago raid was August 8th, 2022, almost 3 years to the day. There was that. There's the Jack Smith special counsel, Letitia James, going after him for the the mortgage fraud, defrauding, nobody knows, just defrauding somebody. Alvin Bragg and the checks. There's the E. Jean Carroll scandal and that Judge Engoron, or I think it was some other left-wing judge. The Fannie Willis case down in Fulton County. I mean, one after another, they kept him in the news and probably made him more of a fighter, made him double down on the fact that he would run again. And then how they're exposed in all of those things, how these people have been exposed for their own crimes in the past 4 years. God is, again, doing a lot of exposing here. And these people, they're filled with rage. They're trying to take him out. And, well, that one clip in the opening montage of, who was that? Al Green, I think. Well, we don't mean literally take him out. We're gonna. Where is that in my notes here? I promise this president is going to be brought down. He's going to be brought down. And I don't mean physically. Of course, that's not, calling for his assassination. Imagine if a Republican had been saying that. But you look at how God puts them in these traps. And they double down, and then God exposes them. We heard a lot, of course, about seditious conspiracy following January 6th. Seditious conspiracy. I have it here in my notes. If two or more persons in any state or territory or in any place subject to the jurisdiction of the United States conspire to overthrow, comma, put down, comma, or to destroy by force the government of the United States or to levy war against them and so on. I mean, I would say what has happened the last 10 years is a conspiracy to overthrow the government of the United States. I'm not a lawyer. I'm sure someone's going to argue, well, the placement of the comma means that it has to be by force. Okay, but you could just take that and say conspire to overthrow the government of the United States. And there's a million lawyers out there, Democrat lawyers, who would read it that way and go after President Trump for it. And all you have to do, the process is the punishment. And I'm not saying that President Trump needs to do that because he's got a legal case to actually go about and do it. Instead, they like, what was it, Bill Barr, they divine these things. They divine their own interpretation into these laws. And the process is the punishment. And they hope that in that process, they can get President Trump to perjure himself. But look, in each of these cases, they've exposed themselves. Jack Smith is being investigated. I can't remember all the details of, there's just so many things to keep up with. My head was, the walls were spinning yesterday. My head was spinning this morning, trying to just wrap my mind around all of the evil, all of these conspiracies that have taken place. And again, going back to Fulton County, there was the big scandal about, well, who was that lawyer from Washington, D.C., who was giving Fannie Willis guidance and direction? That was coming right from the White House. And now we know, again, all of these things tie together. The Joe Biden auto pen, who was running the White House? We had the infographic. All roads lead to Obama. In many ways, the Democrats, they have given Republicans the game plan. Here are all the laws that we're accusing you of breaking. And if Republicans had some will, they would just turn them around and say, hey, we actually have evidence of you doing these things. Then you throw in all the other violations. I mean, it's like you can't even bring up that the FBI lied to the FISA court so they could spy on the Trump campaign. All of these Fourth Amendment violations using the intelligence apparatus of the United States to conspire to overthrow the duly elected president of the United States, the head of the executive branch of government. I don't know what on January 6th the game plan would have been if they had taken over Congress. Congress doesn't run the government in that sense. They never explain, well, okay, well, let's assume they actually got control of the building. What do you do? They weren't taking over the White House like had happened during the Summer of Love, July 2020, when President Trump had to run down into the bunker, James Comer announced that the House Oversight Committee has issued subpoenas to quite a few people involved in this scandal: Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, Merrick Garland, James Comey, Bill Barr, Jeff Sessions, Robert Mueller, Loretta Lynch, Eric Holder. And this is, again, it may not lead to anything, but you kind of reset the clock when you have these hearings. Now, if I were him and I was serious about doing this, I'd go for lower rung people. I'd try to get the people who were talking, the analysts that told John Brennan, hey, there's I do Russia intel and there's nothing here. And then John Brennan says to him, well, it has a ring of truth to it, so put it in there. Get those guys to come and speak and start pulling all of these bricks out that they're standing on and watch them tumble. But again, going after these big names, and you kind of reset the clock. If you can get them into a hearing and they're under oath, they're either going to plead the fifth and not say anything, or they're going to admit what they did was wrong, or they're going to perjure themselves. You know, there's no reason not to keep doing something like this. Maybe finally Republicans will ask them some clear-cut questions. I think the big takeaway for me, just in going through that Durham annex, is that it tells you exactly what John Brennan and Barack Obama knew and when they knew it. They'll have all sorts of plausible deniability. Well, I was just trusting what so-and-so said. John Brennan knew that the DNC had cooked up this hoax. He knew about Steele. He briefed Obama about it on August 3rd. And then you get to December 6th, 7th, and Obama says, I want it all. I want it all in a report. Brennan is putting the craziest nonsense in the report. And nobody says, Barack Obama doesn't say, hey, I just want to be as transparent as possible, and I want the American public to know the DNC was cooking up this thing about Russia collusion and Putin, and they made up, they got, I mean, I have, you talk about confusion and Satan wanting to blur the lines. I have my little infographic that I have to make to connect all of the dots to these things. But they make up, there's the Alpha Bank story, and they get a fake, these fake servers that keep pinging Trump Tower to make it look like the Russians are trying to get in or are communicating with Trump Tower. All of these things get laundered through the system, through what was it, the Perkins Coie Fusion GPS. Then you go the other route, Charles Dolan, Igor Danchenko, then back to Christopher Steele, leak it to the press. And then the FBI is just pulling in all of these things, and they think, well, this is corroborating this, and here's more corroborating evidence, and it all comes from the same source. And Obama knew that, and Obama didn't say to John Brennan, make sure you put that in the report, because I want full transparency. I want that January 6th ICA to reveal all of this. That's the conspiracy, is that he knew that that was going on, and encouraged it in many ways. Some of these things that the Clinton campaign pulled off could not happen without the FBI and CIA signing off on it. And said, well, how are we gonna keep this going? How are we gonna keep the conspiracy alive? He had in that moment, he could have decided, we'll squash it or we'll use this. And he used it. Notice, remember this clip. This was Obama at one of his final press conferences, and he's talking about this report and the hack that Russia did on the DNC, allegedly. Clip 9.
I want to talk about Vladimir Putin again. Just to be clear, do you believe Vladimir Putin himself authorized the hack, and do you believe he authorized that to help Donald Trump?
Yeah, when the report comes out, before I leave office, that will have drawn together all the threads. And so I don't want to step on their work ahead of time. What I can tell you is that the intelligence that I've seen gives me great confidence in their assessment that the Russians carried out this hack.
Which hack?
The hack of the DNC and the hack of John Podesta. Now, but again, I think this is exactly why I want the report out, so that everybody can review it.
It wasn't just an internal document. This was propaganda, and he knew it. I want all the threads drawn together. Why can't they just subpoena? If you can't go after him because of presidential immunity, whatever, get him into a House hearing and ask, what did John Brennan talk to you about on August 3rd? Then you say you want this report that draws all the threads together, and you don't want that to just be an internal document. You want the public to see it. I want everybody to be able to review it. And then the bit about Russia hacking the DNC, and you get into all the language and how they morphed that into an attack on the election. There's not even evidence of that. If you remember, that was Jim Comey going to the DNC and the DNC saying, you can't touch our servers. CrowdStrike has this fancy report for you that says the Russians did it. And then there's finally a hearing with the CrowdStrike people, and they say, well, that was just our best guess, was that Russia did it. We don't actually have concrete evidence of who did it. But Obama there saying, I want this out. It was already done. That clip we just played there is December 16th. It was leaked to the Washington Post. It might be Washington Post or New York Times on December 9th. What the conclusion was, because Obama and Brennan, they had it cooked. It was set. The narrative was set. And if you remember, I mean, you can go through all of these things. They're publicly available. January 6th, intelligence community assessment. It's just a bunch of random headlines from Russia Today. And then there's the redacted annex of the Steele dossier. And then there are all of the very sophisticated conclusions from the CIA and the NSA and the FBI. I think it was the NSA guy, Mike Rogers, says, I have low confidence in this conclusion that Putin conspired with Trump. And somehow that doesn't raise any eyebrows. But it was there. And all they needed was that report. And that gave them the excuse to go and brief Donald Trump, the defensive briefing, the entrapment. And that triggered the Mueller scandal. And that triggered, again, some of the stuff that I covered earlier in the show. Going on a decade. That's how I was thinking about this show being 10 years old and how it started. I mean, right around the time, it probably started just a couple months before Trump came down the escalator. I think that was, June 2015, maybe a little later. That's just been a story that it's like all the time having to get into this, and you just wait. When is this going to be fully revealed and exposed? When are people going to be held accountable? And like Mr. Fleury said yesterday on the show, you go back to our court case, and if you haven't read this book, read Raising the Ruins. Request this book. I would say, in going through all of this history of the past 10 years, this is probably one of the best books you can read to understand the mind of the radical left, to understand really the mind of the devil and how he lies, how he conspires, how he functions and operates. In that book, there's this moment where the church is about to be taken to damages trial, and it's not looking great for the church, Mr. Fleury writes, but we also saw a brightly lit silver lining in the damages trial because it would be tried before a jury. All along, my father felt that if we could tell our story before a jury and expose the WCG for what it deceitfully did to Mr. Armstrong's legacy, we would gain a distinct advantage. Later on, he writes, but to be exposed as a liar before a 12-person jury in a packed courtroom is much different. And rest assured, even if only a damages trial, we were determined that those men would be brought before the jury to answer for what they had done. Now, Mr. Gerald Fleury and the church lawyers and ministry definitely had the right motive and the willpower to go and get this done with God behind them. You're seeing a little bit of that now on the Republican side. But it's all in God's timing. And God is exposing a lot of this. Later on, it says, he's talking about a sermon that his dad gave. My dad explained that one reason this trial might be dragging on is because God wants us to expose the WCG. He told the membership that we intended to press forward fully intent on exposing them every step of the way. On top of the literature, we obtained access to thousands of internal documents through discovery, and that was how they were exposed. Besides raising the ruins, he writes, we had the opportunity to expose their lies during litigation before judges, magistrates, attorneys, clerks, law students, reporters, even the general public. And in many ways, I mean, that God gave the church that victory. And you could say that, you know, maybe they haven't faced accountability yet, but they have certainly been exposed. Malachi's message in raising the ruins exposed them. And you can see the same thing sort of playing out in the United States. You know, maybe it will take a while for there to be accountability, but they're being exposed. And why is that happening? Why did it happen for Mystery of the Ages in that court case? You get to see it. You choose. You decide. You see all of this laid bare. Notice this clip from Miranda Devine talking about, you know, even Trump just mentioning to her that he regrets not being tougher about going after the bad actors when he won in 2016. Clip three.
I think, you know, the transparency and the fact to set straight the historical record can't be underestimated. But yes, I do. And I think the reason that I think there will be accountability this term is because President Trump told me that he regrets now being so merciful to Hillary Clinton in his first term. He pointed out that at his rallies, people were chanting, lock her up. But he decided when he got into office, look, she's the wife of a former president. She's a former Secretary of State. I want the country to heal. Let's just let bygones be bygones. But then they kept coming after him. He realizes now that accountability is a deterrent, that these people, there need to be heads on pikes, whether it's Hillary Clinton. I mean, Barack Obama's probably protected by presidential immunity, but he can still have the processes, the punishment thing that poor old Trump had to go through, lawyering up and having years of being hounded and having all his personal effects looked into. And who knows? I mean, he may get a different opinion. So whether it's Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, certainly John Brennan and James Clapper, there are allegations quite firmly evidenced of perjury and also conspiracy.
Trump was ready to move on, let bygones be bygones, but they kept coming after him. Julie Kelly writes, they never thought it would happen. Even the perps are doing damage control. The Times ran an op-ed last week by former CIA Director John Brennan and James Clapper, both in the hot seat for concocting the scheme to set the record straight on Russiagate. The column, of course, did no such thing. To the contrary, the pair repeated the same lies and omissions that landed them in current legal jeopardy in the first place. But make no mistake, what's really driving their collective outrage and fear? They never saw this coming. Donald Trump is supposed to be behind bars, not back in the Oval Office. And it goes back to the miracle victory of 2024, the miracle on July 13th. Looking back at the parallels with raising the ruins, we appealed to the Supreme Court, Mr. Flurry, then they denied it. Mr. Flurry said, it's in God's hands. We can't rely on man's system. And then there's a miracle victory. And God working out these details. Just going back to the start of this show, I mean, how could you have any trust in man's system when you look at the way we try to rule and govern? I mean, it's like weeks now they're talking about the Texas redistricting effort. You look at all of the propaganda in this world of lies. I covered these verses. We cover them a lot. Ephesians 2 and verse 2, 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4. This is Satan's world, and we have to see it in very clear terms. Even on the right, there's so much that is wrong. We just have to look. It's not about parties. I mean, this isn't supposed to, it's not a political show. We're not Republicans or Democrats. It's what's true and what's false, what's right and wrong, good and evil. Isaiah 59, behold, the Lord's hand is not shortened that it cannot save, neither his ear heavy that it cannot hear, but your iniquities have separated between you and your God, and your sins have hid his face from you that he will not hear. For your hands are defiled with blood and your fingers with iniquity. Your lips have spoken lies. Your tongue has muttered perverseness. None calls for justice, nor any pleads for truth. They trust in vanity and speak lies. They conceive mischief and bring forth iniquity. They trust vanity. They trust emptiness. If John Brennan's saying it and he's on MSNBC, must be very credible. We'll trust it. It's emptiness, it's vanity, and it's a lie. And these people conspire mischief. But again, it's not just one party. This is man's world. Look at this story. We talk about it a lot again, Israel and Gaza and Hamas, and the propaganda war with Western media. The Associated Press had an article recently titled "Survivors of Israel's Pager Attack on Hezbollah Struggle to Recover," and has all of these brutal pictures of mutilated people because evil Israel tried to take out a terrorist organization. And why can't the Associated Press doesn't say anything about, well, it's Israel's fault, they shouldn't have done this, look at the suffering they've caused. Well, what about if you really care about your family's safety? Try to avoid joining an international terrorist organization. They put their own families at risk by doing this. But it's Israel's fault for retaliating and defending itself. The Associated Press is awful. Another one from the Associated Press. Starvation attacks the bodies of these children in Gaza. Doubling down on the famine narrative. Because the pictures expose that they were taking advantage of diseased children and saying that they were victims of a famine. But instead of saying, yeah, that was wrong, we shouldn't have done that, they double down and say, starvation always stalks the most vulnerable first. Kids with pre-existing conditions like cerebral palsy waste away quickly because the high-calorie foods they need have run out, along with nutritional supplements. So they were actually starving kids. They're just the first victims of the famine, Associated Press. But after months of Israeli blockade and turmoil in the distribution of supplies, children in Gaza with no previous conditions are also starting to die from malnutrition, aid workers and doctors say. Won't say who the aid workers work for, who the doctors work for. No evidence. They want to hear lies. That's what's terrifying about it, is it's very easy to see through all of this, but they want the lies. It's Isaiah 30 and verse 10, prophesied deceits. There's another photographer who's exposed for taking these staged pictures of starving Gazans. I mean, any rational, logical person would look at the cover of that Time magazine issue and say that that's staged. That's just a weird photo to have. So the photographer, and it's exposed, he goes around and he does this. He gathers them up. And hold out your food bowls. Look really hungry. Look really sad. Collect them all together. Photos of hunger and despair from Gaza were staged in collaboration with Hamas, German newspaper reveals. Again, it's so easy to know this. It's so easy for the New York Times, that has thousands of employees and fact checkers, to prove that these journalist photographers in Gaza are liars. And I saw one person that mentioned that the New York Times, they have millions of followers on their main page, but then they have another Twitter account that's set up for fact checking. And that has like a few thousand followers. So when they publish the story of the starving Gazan children, they don't correct it on there, which even if they did, it would just be in the comments section and buried beneath it. They fact check it on this other account that has like 10,000 followers and say, oh, well, we have to take that photo down because the journalists staged this and they lied about what it was depicting. But we give the benefit of the doubt to the Hamas-funded journalists in Gaza. It's obviously lies, and people want to believe them. And what's motive? I mean, like Mr. Fleury has been saying on this show, it's they hate Jews. It's motivated by that. I mean, there's a whole spiritual dimension about why that's such a deep hatred. Talking about that Candace Owens clip that Mr. Fleury played, it's just, she said it was demonic what Israel was doing. It's demonic what she is saying. She was saying how the IDF are just mowing children down in food lines. What about, as if she's seen video footage of that? Why are the IDF there? She implies that they're going in there so they can shoot little Palestinian kids. And Israel, the IDF is putting their own soldiers at risk to be in there to do something they don't have to do. They shouldn't even be doing it. To go and try to feed them, and then they get shot at and they return fire. And Candace Owens says, well, they're no different than the Nazis who lined up Jews in front of a trench and just shot them all right into their graves. The comments on that Candace Owens video with Tucker Carlson, I mean, it's a frightening turn that the West is taking. It's 1930s England. That Candace Owens interview with Tucker, I think the last I checked, it was close to 4 million views. And the comments, early on, the comments just loved what Candace was saying. You've opened up my eyes to see something that I couldn't see before. And good for you for not being driven by the Daily Wire and their narrative to stand alone, because this evil cabal of Jews are dictating what people who work for these organizations are allowed to say. And then, boy, the comments really got drowned out because Tucker and Candace made some comment, a negative comment about Nick Fuentes, a guy I also don't know much about, but I know that he also does not like Jews. And they said something without giving Nick Fuentes a chance, because there's so much nuance in these things. Really, the only way to understand these people's perspective is to have 200 three-hour-long podcasts so we can digest all of the nuance, because Hitler wasn't really that bad. It was the Russians attacking the Jews. This is Daryl Cooper. And the Germans, they were fear. They wanted more land. So they started removing the Jews to protect them, and they ended up in camps and died in the camps. It's just a terrifying way to think. But then they make this comment about Nick Fuentes, who is a Jew hater, and you can read all the comments, people rushing to the defense of Nick Fuentes. I mean, just people that you shouldn't even associate with or talk with. But everybody wants to. Well, you can't debate with people like this. I'll read a quote from Mr. Fleury, who talks about they're impervious to reason. When you start thinking along these lines, you are not a rational person. It's terrifying, again, what is becoming mainstream. This is an article about Daryl Cooper, and he's this historian who was really a no-name guy a couple of years ago, and then he gets on Tucker's show, and now you see him. I see him all over the place now because, well, that's the other side of the argument. If we want to have a rational debate on this three-hour-long podcast, we've got to hear both sides. Hitler had a point, in other words, is what they're trying to say. And that's what Daryl Cooper is trying to say. That's what Tristan Tate and all of the, if we could have just got them on a podcast and hear them out, they wouldn't hate us so much and they wouldn't attack us. I got to find the quote from Mr. Fleury. He talks, Satan, the prince of the power of the air, broadcasts in moods, attitudes, and impulses that make us impervious to reason if we follow it. And there are a few people that are, very few, who are alarmed like this, as they should be. Mr. Fleury mentioned it on the show yesterday, that how is that picture of the starving Jew having to dig his own grave in a tunnel in Gaza not all over right-wing media? Douglas Murray, we played these clips, but he talked about just how dangerous this is to be entertaining views of these Nazi apologists. And this article, and it's titled "How a Nazi-Obsessed Amateur Historian Went from Obscurity to the Top of Substack." Over the last decade, Daryl Cooper's ideas have not changed much. Just talking about how he went on these anti-Semitic podcasts years ago. They write, through the timeline of his career and his abiding interest in reshaping people's understanding of two groups, Jews and Nazis, but he has cleaned up his act enough to build a major audience. Instead of appearing on a neo-Confederate podcast, this year Cooper went on Joe Rogan, where he subtly shifted the story of the Nazis into a more flattering light for millions of listeners. Later, they say, with more than 170,000 subscribers, Cooper has the most popular history newsletter on Substack. They write, compared to overt Holocaust deniers, Cooper is subtle, even shifty. Isn't that just the way Hitler operated? Isn't that just the way the devil operates? Blur the lines. There's nuance. We've got to hear him out. And you look at the way Churchill approached it, and it was, there's good and there's evil. There's freedom, and then there's enslavement. I just wanted to play a couple of these clips from that Joe Rogan. Later, he interviewed with Douglas Murray talking about Daryl Cooper. This is clip 6.
Daryl has some of the most nuanced, balanced, and charitable views on all the figures in history.
Well, particularly Hitler, it seems.
No, you're wrong. True. You're wrong. He doesn't. What did he call him? How did he describe him?
I think he compared him to a methed out psychopath who was holding an entire nation of people hostage, I believe was the
He also said on here that he wasn't anti-Semitic until the Holocaust. There were no speeches of Hitler's in the 1930s.
No, he said he was not public about it.
He said he was downplaying it to win over. He said there was a period where he was downplaying it to win over popular support in Germany. It was his argument.
There is no historian of World War II who thinks that Hitler was downplaying anti-Semitism in the 1930s. That was what he was doing. He wrote a book about it in the 1920s. He got to power on it, and he grew his power on the back of it. The idea that you can argue that in the 1930s, Adolf Hitler was downplaying the anti-Semitism, like, there's no historian who would agree with that.
Dave Smith is there, too. They got all the experts. Daryl Cooper has some of the most nuanced, balanced, and charitable views on all figures in history. Well, Hitler did a few good things for the Germany, and yeah, that was bad, but look at all of these good things. If he could have just had his way, and if Churchill wasn't such a warmonger, it would have been fine. And one person pointed out that the reason a lot of these figures, they go after Churchill, is because Churchill was a Zionist. Churchill wanted the Jews to have a homeland. I mean, they're apologists for Adolf Hitler, but they also hate Churchill because Churchill liked the Jews. I wanted to get into a longer segment on this. It was something that we prepared years ago. Just some of these quotes from Martin Gilbert's book, from William Manchester's book about Churchill and his love for Jerusalem and how he wanted the Jews to have their own nation. This one is from Manchester. Nevertheless, by the time he entered the colonial office, Churchill was committed to it, the creation of a Jewish state. The more he pondered the issue, the more his enthusiasm for a Jewish homeland grew, and he reaffirmed the declaration at a time when a majority of the British officials in the Middle East were urging that it be repudiated. I have a bunch of quotes about Churchill and his efforts to create the nation that we know as Israel today. But you look at Daryl Cooper, and I think it was his podcast with Tucker, where he says, you know, Churchill started World War II. You know, Hitler didn't really want that. If Churchill wouldn't have just been so such a warmonger, and if Hitler just had his way for a little longer, it would have all worked out and been fine. Notice just one more clip from Douglas Murray. Again, we played this a few months ago. This is clip 8.
I'm saying, just as the left likes to play with very dark, ugly stuff, and they've done it for decades, they have played down Chairman Mao's murder of the Chinese throughout his era in power. They played down Stalin. They still march on occasions with posters of Lenin. They've spent decades trying to do down evils that were done on their side. And I would suggest that one of the things that is going on at the moment is, despite, or maybe because of, what you just described, there are movements now on the right in America, subcultures, including people who follow both of you, who are very interested in playing with this absolute beyond the pale thing. Why somebody like Jake Shields wants to play around with Holocaust denial? Why?
They get very close to these dangerous, dark ideas. Satan wants to blur the line. He wants you to, well, there's nuance to it. Just get as close as you can to it. It's not going to lead to you putting the Jews in concentration camps and building gas chambers. And like I said earlier, it's happening on the right. It's good and evil. It's not Democrats and Republicans. It's not right versus left. It's good and evil. It's truth and lies. I was reading a bit about the Entebbe raid, and there's a diary entry from one of the hostages, and she talks about this. There are these two Germans, and then they were working with the Arabs, and she was talking to the German terrorist, and he was so nice to her and so soft-spoken, and his motive seemed so pure. And she said, for a moment, I wanted them to succeed. Like, they just didn't seem that bad. And then she said, as she reflected on it a little bit more, she said, this is how the Holocaust happened. Some nice words, smooth talk, and people wanted deceit. She writes, and because we so wanted to believe that he was different from the others, better and more easygoing than the others, we believed him. It's easy to believe. If the matter hadn't ended as it did, no one would have had to urge this good German to fire off his cartridge clips at our children and us, or to blow us up with the grenades and explosives. It's the first time I've comprehended the Holocaust. And that terrorist, for a moment, would not have hesitated to kill those Jews if he had to. But boy, he sounded nice. He seemed really nice. He was dressed up nicely. And a lot of the worst evils in history, they start by hiding behind a lot of nice-sounding words. And you have to discern it. You have to see it. I come back to this article. I feel like every time I prepare a show, Mr. Gerald Fleury, a dangerous new age of worshiping the will. And he's talking about the radical left. And I'll just conclude with this article. He writes, what is happening in America, a haze of deception enshrouds our nation. It is stunning how easily journalists, politicians, and other figures today deceive people. We must understand the spirit behind this deception, as it is far more dangerous than most people realize. He quotes Hitler's annotations of magic, history, theory, and practice include highlights such as the difference between true and false has disappeared, and quite a lot is gained with magic, namely the possibility to intervene in this structure, that is to say, change the world according to our will. But this is magic, and on this basis we are able to create reality where no reality is. That's quoting Hitler. Mr. Fleury says, Hitler believed that he did not need to rely on reason, intelligence, reality, absolute truth, or God. Instead, he worshipped his own human will and believed he could create his own reality. Consciously or subconsciously, many people today believe the same thing. They just keep lying until they convince themselves and those around them that they are right. There is an evil spirit world, and these spirits have power. Scriptures make this reality exceedingly plain. Read the Gospels, for example, and you see that Jesus Christ went around casting out demons routinely. Where did those demons go? They didn't die. Millions of them are cast down and confined to this earth, along with Satan the devil. Mr. Fleury writes, if you are not rooted in Jesus Christ and God's Word, as revealed in the Bible, you are easily corrupted in the deeper strata of your emotional nature. Satan, the prince of the power of the air, broadcasts in moods, attitudes, and impulses that make us impervious to reason if we allow it. There is always somebody out there who wants to get us to worship the will But the only way to escape the devastating catastrophes prophesied to engulf America is to be rooted in truth based on the Word of God. And there's just two ways. There's just right and wrong. There's good and evil. And a lot of these people in the United States and the West are impervious to reason. Well, if you haven't read that article, it's again titled A Dangerous New Age of Worshiping the Will, and that's by Mr. Gerald Fleury. If you haven't, request a copy of Raising the Ruins. We'll send you this book for free. We also offer free subscriptions to The Trumpet Magazine. We thank you very much, or I thank you very much for joining me on The Trumpet Daily today. Again, if you have any feedback, send that to td@thetrumpet.com. We'll see you tomorrow.